Have you ever watched a cow eat? I did last week. It's really boring. They just eat. Well, they just eat to live. They don't really seem to have any other purpose for their eating. It's simple for cows. But for human beings, meals are not so simple. For human beings, meals are often quite complicated because human beings, unlike cows, don't just eat to live. We eat for all sorts of reasons. For us, meals can have meaning. The way we eat together often conveys a message, and it's about who has power or who's in control. The way we eat, it's often about who's in and who's out. It can be about who's higher and who's lower. It can be about who belongs. For human beings, unlike cows, meals are complicated, and eating together can be a place where people play games, power games. And in the time of Jesus, people played power games with meals. If you were invited to a meal at the time of Jesus, there would be subtle tricks that would be played. And when you read the accounts of Jesus eating meals, you need to understand some of the ancient power games that were played with meals, or else the Bible reading might not make so much sense. So what I'd like to do today is to explore with you four power games that the ancient people played with meals. These are really clever tricks. You can use these games to put people down, to put them in their place, to exclude and include. And as I show you these power games, please don't get ideas. So here are four power games. Maybe we play them too, played in many cultures and places around the world, but especially played in the time of Christ. And Pastor Doug, you're going to demonstrate some of these power games for me. So here's the table, and Doug is the host. That's the person who invites people. The first game is called Like Eats with Like. So let's imagine that Doug is here. He's hosting a meal. Who's Doug going to invite to his meal? It's going to be someone like him, probably middle-aged.
Someone like me.
That was a joke.
Middle-aged. Thanks for that, Matt. Thank you. That's very kind of you. Victoria. Yeah. I mean, you know what they say about people who've been married a long time? They start becoming
Looking more and more like each other.
Come on, my love.
So eaters of a feather flock together. This is how it worked in the Bible. Cool people eat with cool people. Religious people eat with religious people. Jewish people eat with Jewish people. And if you've ever been in a high school yard at lunch, you've seen it work. This is a trick that still exists a little bit in our society. Like eats with like. And you can make someone belong by inviting them to a meal because you can say, you're like me now. Or you can keep someone out by not letting them eat with you. No, you're not like me, is what you can say, by not inviting someone to a meal. One time, some friends of mine, this is a very long time ago, I'm not really that bitter. One time, when I was a young adult, we had this awesome friendship group, you know, just all the mates we used to get together, and they invited everyone in the group but me. And I felt like they were saying, no, you're not like us. And the reason they invited everyone but me was because they wanted to get drunk. And I had become a Christian and didn't want to do that. And so what did they say? You're not like us. Second trick is where you sit shows where you fit. So Doug has a feast. He invites you along. He really likes you. So where's he going to seat you? Oh. So you see, this is a power game. Where you sit someone shows where they fit. In the ancient world, they had U-shaped tables, and at feasts, they actually reclined low down on couches or on mats, but they also did actually sit at some meals. And the closer you sat to the host, the higher your status. Does that make sense? Now, this is a great trick. You can do this at a family Christmas. So you've got awkward Uncle Rumpole, who you really hate, but you have to invite him, and he says all sorts of stupid stuff that you don't like. And so what do? You sit awkward Uncle Rumpole. No one has that, do they? You sit him down the end with the kids. And see what you've done? Where you sit shows where you fit. This is actually a really clever trick. You could use it too. In the Middle Ages, they did this. Men got to sit at the table. Tables were for men. The girls and the kids had to stand to eat. What did that say about who dominated that culture? Third game, inviting those who can give something back. So now Doug's going to hold
a
feast.
Good one.
And he's going to use this meal. He's going to use it to get something. So who's he going to invite?
Something back. Sorry, Victoria, off you go. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you for your help, but thank you. Something, someone who can give me something back.
Do we do this now?
Am I going to be in trouble later?
You can't invite me.
Wendy, come on down.
And Kim? And
Kylie, and Amelia, come on. You know,
okay.
You know how I sing sometimes and stuff, but boy, do I need people to make me look good. So ladies, please, great singers, musos.
All right.
Come and join me because, wow, I need people to make me look
good.
Yeah,
you've had your glory moment now, Pastor Doug.
Have a seat.
So this is actually how it was done in the ancient world. You don't invite someone of lower status than you. You don't invite someone poorer than you because they can't give you something back. That's actually how it plays out. You invite people from whom you can gain advantage. This is how many traditional cultures work. I wonder if we still do that. Do we? I don't know. But this is the thing. You can use a meal to get something. Have you ever done that? Well, now you know the trick. The fourth power game played in ancient meals was what I serve shows what I really think of you. So, Kylie, Wendy, Amelia, you've been invited over to a lovely meal with Doug. Wait for it. You've brought, don't show the girls. You brought a bottle of wine and some lovely nibblies, some hors d'oeuvres, which is spelt horses doovers. It always makes me laugh. And you bring them and Doug's really happy because you've brought nice stuff, which shows that you respect him. And then mealtime comes, you've had a lovely glass of wine and a bit of the cheese you brought, and Doug serves, go, do it. A bowl of Weet-Bix. And he says, look at this, have as many as you like, I've got plenty to spare. And you look over at the cupboard and you can see he's got like Italian gnocchi and he's got some really nice stuff, but he served you Weet-Bix. Now, this was an ancient trick. This was how it was done. The Roman emperor, Elagabalus, he did a trick. He invited his enemies over for a meal. This is a true story. And you know what he served them? Live parrot, rotten fish guts, and he served them food made of stone painted up to look real. And the legend goes that they broke their teeth on it. But you see how it plays out. Now, of course, this is dependent on your means, on how much money you've got and what you can afford to do. But, you know, like it's a bit like romance. The thing with romance is the more effort you go to, the more it means. So, blokes, just rock down to IGA and buy some flowers there. Go to the florist, better. Pick them yourself. As long as they're good ones, even better. So, like what I serve, the effort that I put in shows what I think of you or how much I respect you or what I want to get from you. Let's thank these women for their humiliation. Okay. Now, which of these games are still played in our culture? Do we have versions of them? Do we do them in some way subtly too? Just take a very short moment, 1 minute only, and see if you can notice a game that you've seen played in this 21st century. Just tell someone nearby if you'd like. Quick show of hands, just put up your hand if you think that some of these games still exist in some form. If they're still around a little bit, just show me your hand. I think they are. They're present in most cultures in some way, often hidden. And so now, Jesus is invited over to a meal. And Jesus is invited to the house of who? Have a look. Yell it out. Not just a Pharisee, not just any old Pharisee, which is a religious leader. Who? A ruler of the Pharisees. This is a really important detail. Jesus has just been invited to the best possible place. He's been invited to the religious elite, the boss man. It's like being invited to the bishop's house. And what happens at this meal is really important, because this is actually Jesus' opportunity at this meal. The power games are going to be played at this meal. If Jesus plays these games, what will that mean? It will mean he's one of them. He's accepted. It will mean he's a Pharisee. The Pharisees have been checking Jesus out, by the way, and they think he's a potential ally. They originally liked him, and now they're getting him over to a meal to check him out. And it says here something really interesting. He was invited to dine at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees, and they were not listening to him carefully. See this? They were not actually submitting to him in any way. They were not listening to him carefully. They were, yell it out, watching him carefully. So what are they doing? They're trying him out. They're testing him. They're seeing who this Jesus really is. And they're watching his every move like a hawk. And something happens at this point which is really strange. You see, we're at the house of the most religious elite, the best of the best, the holiest of the holiest, and suddenly a man with a terrible disease, dropsy, it says, and there was a man before him. So like, we're in this sanctum sanctorum, this holy spot where the elite are, and right before Jesus in that room is a man who is unclean, sick, unworthy. And you know, sickness to them meant sin. What's going on? What's the trick? They're testing Jesus to see what's going to happen. Is Jesus going to be on their side and go, get out, foul sinner, you stink. I don't want to get your disease. I'm holy, you're not. Because that would be like eats with like. He would play the game. Also, there's another game here, which is he going to break their rules and heal on the Sabbath day? What does Jesus do with this? Does he play their game? No, he breaks all the power games. I love this bit because Jesus does what to this man with dropsy? He heals him. Is that man unclean anymore? No. Is that man unworthy anymore? No. Is that man excluded from the Pharisees' table anymore? Oh dear. What Jesus does is he eats with sinners, he eats with prostitutes and tax collectors. We've had all those stories. Now he eats with the religious ones. He eats with anyone. And when he eats with people, he transforms them. So he just says, Prue, come and eat with me. And his love makes you worthy. And all of a sudden, like is eating with like. Because Jesus makes you like him by welcoming you just as you are. That's the first game. The second game was where you sit shows where you fit. And so we're at this incredible, opulent meal, and there's all these religious people, and Jesus notices them coming in, and they're jostling for position. Where do they want to sit? They want to sit as close as they can to the ruler Pharisee. They want the place of honor. And by the way, if I can get close to the boss, maybe I can get some influence with him. So they're all jostling to sit. And where does Jesus sit? Well, the story doesn't say, but it's quite obvious. It's implied. Where does Jesus sit? He sits somewhere else, not at the position of honor, not at the best place. And then he offends all the guests by saying, hey, you lot, it's a lot smarter to sit where I sat. It's a lot smarter to sit in the low place, because then you might get elevated. But if you go and sit over there, what might happen is he might ask you to move, like Doug did. Where you sit shows where you fit. See, Jesus breaks this because he just eats with sinners all the time. And Jesus shows us how God breaks this rule. Because God sits with sinners. God sits with the poor. God sits with the outcast. That is what Jesus shows us about God. God says to the outcast and the poor and the sinners, you fit with me. My wife's grandparents, Ed and Laura Roki, lived in Boolaroo, which is a town in northern South Australia. And when they were young, there was a rule about where you sit shows where you fit. Do you know what it was? Men on that side, women on that side. And Grandpa Ed and Grandpa Laura were trailblazers because they got married. And do you know what they did? the first Sunday they came to church after getting married, they caused a massive scandal. Because instead of him sitting with the men and her sitting with the women, they sat together. And by sitting together, they said a number of things. One, they said, where I sit is where I fit. We fit together. We belong together. Another thing they said is, men aren't better than women. We're equal, which is why we can sit together. It was pretty amazing back then. So next Sunday, we've got a huge community lunch here. Please come. Sometimes you will see your pastors do weird things at this meal. We don't go and sit at the tables with people. We notice someone out on the edges, some kids, or we notice some people that don't belong. We go and sit with them because we're following Jesus. Where you sit shows where you fit. He sits with the outcasts. The third rule, inviting those who can give something back. I think modern people play this game very well. Firstly, we do meals like tennis. I invite you. The ball's in your court. If you want to be my friend, then you invite me back. Have you ever invited someone over and they say, I will invite you back. That's super awesome. And they never do it. And you're like, what? The game wasn't played properly, was it? Another approach to this is at a pub, we shout. So you got some mates and someone shouts you. It's okay. He gives you a free beer because he knows that you're going to shout him. So we actually do this. We give to get back. Modern people are very good at this. We have business lunches. You have a business lunch with someone. You pick up the tab. Now they owe you. So they're going to give you something back. And by the way, you have a business lunch with them. You pick up the tab. And then a month later, you ring them. And you ask for something. So in this case, the Pharisees have invited Jesus because perhaps he can give them something back. Perhaps he can be an ally with them. Perhaps something good's going to happen here. And Jesus notices this, and so what does he say? Well, when you have a dinner, don't just invite people who will give you something back. The people that you really enjoy being with, who really make you feel good, don't just invite them. In that day, a rich person would not invite a poor person because of the first two rules, the first two games, you know, like eats with like, and where you sit is where you fit. So rich people didn't invite a poor person. But if you were a poor person and you got an invite from a rich person, how would you feel back then? You'd feel scared. I'm a poor person. I get an invite from a rich Pharisee and, you know, I feel scared. I feel scared because it's a culture of what they call reciprocity. I give to get. If a rich person invites me, I'm not able to pay it back. I don't have the means. I can't invite him back to my hovel. And if a rich person invites me over, my next question is, what does he want from me? I'm going to be in his debt. And Jesus says, let's break all those social rules. He says, invite people who can't give back and don't expect anything back from them. And then he goes and tells a story about it, the story of the great banquet. And Jesus is telling us who God is. Who is God? God is the one who invites you without expecting anything back. He loves you just because. You don't have to do anything to get God's love. And God doesn't love you to get something back from you. That is the good news of Jesus. That is what this parable, I cannot come to the banquet, is all about. And here's the thing. Listen really carefully. This is the bit. Until you live knowing that you are loved first and you don't have to give to God to get back, you'll always just be a Pharisee. You'll always be somebody who's doing your religious stuff to get something back. But when you understand, when you hear, and hear it now and say yes in your heart, when you hear that God loves you just because you're worth it to God, that you don't have to impress. You don't have to do anything to earn this. When you know that, then it's all a completely different game. There's no more tricks. I don't have to give to get back because God gives first. Now, the final game, what I serve. This is a really interesting one. And so Jesus tells this radical parable of someone who serves the best to the poorest. He says, a man once gave a great banquet. The word great in the ancient language is mega. A man once gave a mega, munchy, magnificent meal, a great banquet. And this is a story about God. This is how God works. What does God really think of you? You're worth the best. You're worth the great banquet, which symbolizes heaven. You're worth everything to God. What God prepares for you shows what God really thinks of you. That's why I love Psalm 23 at the end. It says, you prepare a banquet for me. My cup runs over. God shows you what he thinks of you because he's preparing the great banquet of heaven for you. And Jesus takes this even further, because what does Jesus think of you? What does Jesus serve you at his meal? His very own life. Jesus comes to you, he invites you to his banquet, and he says, here, receive me. This is my body, this is my blood, this is my life, this is who I am. That's how much I think of you. As we finish, what has Jesus just done, breaking all these power games? What he has done is show us who God is, and he has shown us what love is. Because Jesus breaks the power games with love.